the rhythm is hit and we wanna make it clear. We ain't scared, this is the vision we want.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff in studio with Peter Phillips and intern Maya McHugh. The White House on March 9, Monday, announced the imposition of new sanctions on various Venezuelan officials, pronouncing itself, quote, deeply concerned by the Venezuelan government's efforts to escalate intimidation of its political opponents. President Obama officially declared that Venezuela poses, quote, an extraordinary threat to national security of the United States. Joining us today, Roger Harris, president of the Marin Task Force on the Americas, and Gloria LaRiva, who works with the Answer Coalition and has traveled to and written extensively about Venezuela. On the second part of today's program, we're joined by Adam Horowitz, producer of the documentary Nuclear Savage, a heartbreaking ethnographic film of Pacific Islanders struggling for survival after decades of international radiation poisoning at the hands of the American government. International affairs from Venezuela to the Pacific Islands today on the Project Censored Show. Stay with us.
About criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, skies, another guy's democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies like an ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by taxing while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens, and the times for the master thief. Combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that
Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips and Maya McHugh. Today's program, International Affairs, from Venezuela to the Pacific Islands. We are joined for the hour by several guests that are going to talk about latest developments in Venezuela and U.S.-Venezuelan relations. And later in the program, we'll be talking about the documentary film Nuclear Savage, about ongoing U.S. testing and the problems of radiation in the Pacific Islands. But first, here's Peter Phillips to announce our guests for the first segment of the program.
Well, we have two guests today. Roger Harris is president of the board of the Marin Task Force on the Americas, and he's had a special interest in Venezuela and Cuba for many years. He's on the Central Committee for the Peace and Freedom Party, is involved with the Neil Proctor Marxist Library. Roger, welcome.
Thank you, Peter.
Also online with us today is Gloria LaRiva. She's been interviewed about Venezuela on KPFA, Telesur, Russia Today, all across the world. She's traveled and written extensively in the region. She's active in the Answer Coalition in San Francisco and the Party for Socialism and Liberation. Gloria, welcome.
How are you, Peter?
Great. Gloria, you just wrote a piece in the Liberation, the newspaper for Socialism and Liberation, entitled Obama Declares Venezuela Extraordinary Threat to the U.S. security. How can he make that claim?
I think it's preparation for further aggression and trying to justify certain issues in that declaration. First of all, the individuals that he named to be sanctioned, their property in the U.S. seized, although they have no property in the U.S., are leaders, officials in the National Police Force, the National Guard, those forces that have been controlling the attacks, the right-wing attacks in the country for over a year now. There were terrorist attacks, 43 people killed. And by saying that they are restricting the right to protest as well as restricting the freedom of speech in Venezuela, he's trying to say to Venezuela, you have no right to defend yourself against the right-wing opposition. Another person that he named is the prosecutor of two of these neo-fascist leaders who basically last February, a year ago, called for the overthrow of the government. And they have been implicated directly in this latest February 12th coup plot that was thwarted by the government. So the U.S. is intervening now openly for the opposition to say, free them, let them continue doing their, destruction and trying to overthrow the government. And then General John Kelly, the head of the Southern Command, spoke to the Senate, U.S. Senate, and said, Venezuela is close to collapse and implosion. These are all preparatory measures to try to justify, as I said, further aggression, and we should be very concerned about that.
Now, that aggression includes certainly supporting right-wing and sort of the power elite class in Venezuela in opposition to the Bolivarian revolution and government that's in place right now. which has been a very democratic process. And the U.S. often doesn't like it that poor people elect the governments and then want to spend their money on helping poor people. So, Roger, could you comment on that? And what's the role here of the National Endowment for Democracy that's U.S. funded?
Yes, I think, Peter, you put your finger exactly on that, that the attempt that the United States has right now is to achieve by extra-constitutional means what they couldn't achieve by electoral means. That there was elections, and there were a number of elections. Hugo Chavez was first elected in 1998. There's been some 19 elections since then. The Chavistas, that's the name of the group of the movement, or it's also called the Bolivarian Revolution, they've been in power, and they've continually been affirmed by the populace. There's been 19 elections about, and they've won all but one of them, often by landslides. Now, recently, the elections have been tighter under President Maduro, and his popularity has been slipping. But we should also notice that the polls tell us that the popularity of the opposition is even lower. So what the United States' policy is, the policy is very simply what they call democracy promotion. But what they mean is regime change. What they want to do in Venezuela is to bring back a neoliberal economic system. Beyond that, they want to make Venezuela a client state. And most important, they want to end Venezuela's role both internally and externally. Venezuela, the Bolivarian Revolution, has made tremendous strides for the people of Venezuela. Poverty has been almost halved. Extreme poverty, the poorest of the poor, that's been reduced to about a third in the period of Chavismo. Social Security has been extended. Pensions for the aged have been extended. Land for the indigenous has been repatriated, so on and so forth. They've also pioneered areas of democracy, not simply representative democracy, but also direct democracy, communal operations. They have co-ops and such. And this is a developing area, but they've been a pioneer in that. And then the third area that the Bolivarian Revolution has been instrumental with internationally has been the Bolivarian Project. The project that Simon Bolivar, the liberator in the Spanish colonial period, made was the regional integration of Latin America and the Caribbean. So we have there those three major roles that the United States wants to roll back.
In particular, the neoliberal agenda would be to not only break down this Bolivarian movement, which is beyond Venezuela. I mean, we're looking at Ecuador, Bolivia, and other countries there, and certainly including Cuba and some other states in the Caribbean. That is a challenge to global corporate capitalism in a very big way. And Gloria, can you just give us a brief rundown, the degree that the U.S. and other neoliberal institutions have been trying to undermine Venezuela and the other countries there that are winning elections by the people and not the elites?
Yes, and it's interesting to see what Bush and Obama have said previously, that they said, well, maybe Hugo Chavez before was elected democratically, but he hasn't ruled democratically, which is a strange twist on their idea of what democracy is. But we have to also remember that Venezuela has the largest reserves of oil in the world. Enormous. And they have been discovered to be the largest in recent years. And when we see what the U.S. has done to destroy the Middle East, overthrow independent states and destroy their societies like Iraq, and trying to do it in Syria, did it in Libya, it's no wonder that they would engage in what they hope will be the overthrow of the Venezuelan revolution. And the opposition members who had a transition agreement, an agreement for what they called a transition to a new government if they had succeeded in the coup, called for basically taking back control of the oil, not for the people, but for the oil corporations. The U.S. right now is using some ex-leaders in Latin America and trying to form an opposition to the progressive trend that Roger mentioned of, you know, the ALBA countries, Nicaragua, Ecuador, Cuba, Venezuela, and some of the Caribbean nations, and Bolivia as well. And for example, several weeks ago, before the coup was thwarted, the coup plot, the ex-president Piñera of Chile, right-wing, the ex-right-wing president of Mexico, Calderon, and Pastrana from Colombia traveled to Venezuela without notice, and they tried to meet one of the opposition members, Leopoldo López, who had called for people to, you know, help overthrow the government last year and who's in jail. They went to try to go meet with him, and they've been demanding his freedom. So has Secretary of State Kerry. So all of this is an attempt to use their allies, even if they're ex-leaders, which shows a little bit of their weakness, to try to establish a different pole against the progress there. And it's really failing. It's very strange, you see, that December 17th, when Obama announced that the Cuban Five would be home, Alan Gross would be back in the U.S., and that they would seek diplomatic relations and eventual normalization of relations with Cuba, it was really intended to help the U.S. look much better and gain some more legitimacy in Latin America right before the April 11 and 12 Summit of the Americas, which is organized by the Organization of American States. Cuba had been expelled in 1962. And then by this declaring Venezuela a national emergency and a threat to the United States, which was completely rejected by even moderate countries in Latin America and worldwide, many countries denounced it. People are looking at this and saying, wait a minute, you were looking to have a better image of the U.S. in the OAS summit, and look what you've done. Now you're going to, you've raised the hackles of people, you've stirred a hornet's nest. So, you know, the U.S. is often miscalculated in their arrogance and feeling still that Latin America is their backyard.
I have a question for you, Gloria. This isn't the first coup attempt in Venezuela. What are the similarities and differences, particularly in the methods from the past, and what do you anticipate for the future?
Well, they've been carried out by a relatively small number. You know, even in 2002, there was about 60 military leaders who were involved in that, and they were purged. And the masses came out, you know, hugely, hundreds of thousands, and it helped to strengthen the Bolivarian Revolution, the movement, the people saw the strength and power that they had. There have been other attempts. I think this last one has been more prolonged. It's not just trying to overthrow the government outright. It's trying to create the destabilizing situation of economic chaos, which, of course, the U.S. is trying to picture Venezuela as ungovernable, as if the U.S. has the right to intervene in a country that has economic problems. They should look inside the U.S., and there's many other countries in a much worse situation. But the economic crisis of the hoarding of goods by corporations, the year-long guarimbas, they're called, these disturbances, attacks, violent attacks, burning buildings, killing people in the street, killing police, killing National Guard, and so on, all of this is intended to create fear and disruption of the economy. So February 12th was supposed to be the culmination. It's not over. We should understand that there will be new attempts. I think what was different this time was there were actual bomber planes, one or two Tucano planes. They had the sites laid out. Luckily, Venezuela had intelligence inside those coup plotter groups to be able to film what was going on, recording telephone conversations of actual plans and how the transition would take place. So, as Roger said, the opposition hasn't been able to win through elections. They haven't been able to win through other means. So they're using extra-legal means. And they're terrified of the economic challenges by the government to the wealthy class. You know, people have seen inflation. They've seen shortages of goods because the corporations are causing it. They mark up prices by 2, 3, 5,000%. And what the government did a year ago, which sparked the opposition attacks, was they said, we're going to limit profits in the stores and of goods to 30% profit markup. The people actually support those kind of measures. So there's been things that say that Maduro is losing popularity, but when you look at the polls inside the country by bourgeois, you know, corporate figures, they actually say that when people are asked, do you approve of the economic measures to control the profiteers and the profit gouging, the percentage of support is as high as 70%. So there can be confusion and feeling like you can blame the president, but when it comes to the actual things that people know will support them, you know, on the daily consumption issue in their daily lives, they do support that.
That's the voice of Gloria LaRiva, working with Answer Coalition. We're also joined today by Roger Harris, president of the Marin Task Force on the Americas. We're talking about Venezuela in the first part of the program. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips and Maya McHugh. We will be back after this musical break to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. Stay with us. This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips and Maya McHugh. I wonder if anybody in the audience recognizes that number. That was pulled up for the show today by our producer, Anthony Fest. It's the Venezuelan National Anthem. We're joined by Gloria LaRiva. We are also joined by Roger Harris of the Marin Task Force for the Americas. Roger, I want to go to you and the propaganda machine has been quite busy in the United States, right? The State Department in particular, State Department spokesperson Jen Psaki, she stated in a very recent press conference about accusations about U.S. involvement and U.S. meddling and so on. She said that they were, quote, ludicrous. She went on to say, quote, as a matter of longstanding policy, the United States does not support political transitions by non-constitutional means. Political transitions must be democratic, constitutional, peaceful, and legal.
Well, Mickey, you know, if that were the case, this would be the most remarkable development in U.S. foreign policy since 1823 when the Monroe Doctrine was promulgated. And the usual psychopathic press corps actually took her to task and made her look very silly because they said, how long has this policy been? Because you've been overthrowing governments regularly. It could be argued quite correctly that there's probably not a country in Latin America or the Caribbean that hasn't felt the boot of U.S. imperialism.
Certainly. We have to really quickly give kudos here. I want you to continue. But the Associated Press reporter Matt Lee actually took her to task. I know, I hate to sound surprised by that. But, you know, often we get more of the lapdog, right, press rather than the watchdog press. And here he was taking her to task saying things like, what do you mean longstanding? Like, what's your definition of this? And Jen actually said, without getting into history, I mean, as if there's not, that doesn't matter. And like, the history of all these affairs doesn't seem to matter to them. It was actually terrible propaganda, you know, frankly, given what's you know, what is known about these kind of situations. But anyway, continue about this issue.
Well, we should talk about the history, because ever since the Bolivarians have been in power, ever since 1998, the U.S. has had a policy of reversing their gains. There was the 2002 coup that Gloria mentioned. In 2006, an arms embargo was put on Venezuela. And then in November 7th of last year, the sanctions were put on Venezuela, military end-use sanctions. In December of last year, on the 18th, there was sanctions to deny visas and freeze assets, and then this latest attempt, the executive order, they're all designed to put the screws onto Venezuela. Now, Venezuela is an oil-dependent economy. That's something that the Bolivarians inherited. Inflation is nothing new. Corruption is nothing new. They're trying to address those problems. Economist Mark Weisbrot from the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C., says that the Venezuelans have ample gold reserves to last them in a worst-case economic scenario for 3 years. So they can work out their economic problems themselves. What is happening right now is that there's a political dimension. The United States is tightening the screws on Venezuela. There's some external things like the decrease in the world price for oil. But what we're seeing right now, as Gloria was talking about, that is an escalation
In the situation of Venezuela. They're saying that there's a national security emergency, and therefore we have to order the seizure of property and assets in the U.S. of 7 Venezuelan individuals, military and civilian. Now, also part of that statement was the White House was saying, we're committed to advocate respect for human rights, safeguarding democratic institutions, and this is the one that was very puzzling to me, protecting the U.S. financial system from the illicit financial flows from private corporations in Venezuela. What does that mean?
I don't understand that.
I don't either. I mean, it's like,
you know, I was reading it and I thought, I really don't understand it, because what's really taken place in Venezuela, which is part of the economic destabilization and so on, is the capital flight, is the very uneven currency exchange that's been of much, much debate, in which the government is basically now, in recent months, devaluing the Bolivar so that it's more reflective of its value on the street, for example. There's a lot of economic problems, and we should, of course, highlight that oil prices worldwide have collapsed to 50% or less than what they were, you know, a few months ago. And we have to really realize, too, who is being harmed by that in the short term. That's Venezuela, Iran, and Russia. And Saudi Arabia, U.S. ally, is the one that's helping to cause that by overproduction of its oil, unlimited oil production, which it knows what it's doing. By doing that is lowering the prices, and it could be that it's, you know, a plan, an agreement with U.S. government oil companies and so on. But One thing is that in terms of like the U.S. role in overthrow and everything, it's true that the U.S. can't go on as they used to with completely open plots of overthrow, like, you know, invading Cuba as they did at the turn of last century. But that's why they have to be what they think is more sophisticated. John Kerry recently, in recent weeks, as part of this whole plan, was going to the Petrocaribe, those are the Caribbean countries, which have been great beneficiaries of Venezuela's oil project, that is, giving them oil at very low rates of interest, like 1% over years payment, in exchange for barter, basic barter of goods. And Kerry was going to these countries and saying, you know, this isn't going to last long, and trying to break them away. So Petrocaribe countries just met, including Cuba and Venezuela, and met to strengthen and to reaffirm their alliance. It's battering the hatch. It's having to unite among these countries to say we're not going to accept this divide and conquer anymore, as used to happen.
Roger, I want to go back to this because I think this statement coming from the White House that they're protecting the U.S. financial system from the illicit financial flows from public corruption in Venezuela. And they've also put sanctions, of course, on Russia and Iran. It seems to me that what they're really saying is, and what the real agenda is, to allow capital, major investments in the world, to have a free flow of investments anywhere. And when countries don't allow that, or resist that in some way, or use their money for the human betterment of their own people, then they're sanctioned. That seems to me what's really being said here, because the other doesn't make any sense. Roger, what do you think about that?
Well, of course, that's the overall imperial project is to have a neoliberal system around the world. So I think you stated it much better than I could have stated it. But when we look at those three items, human rights, democratic institutions, and financial corruption, who was the United States to speak? It was interesting then when Hugo Chavez passed away 2 years ago, March 5th, President Obama did not even do the customary courtesy of sending condolences. When King Abdullah passed away last January, the king of Saudi Arabia, Obama dropped everything, went to the funeral, was effusive with his compliments. Saudi Arabia is a country where they don't even have corruption in elections because they don't have elections, where people routinely get their heads cut off. For lesser crimes, they get their arms and legs cut off or their eyes gouged out. Women can't even drive. So why do we call Venezuela a problem where we have democratic institutions a problem or human rights when the United States supports and even praises one of the most repressive regimes in the entire world?
Well, Roger Harris, it seems that the extraordinary threat that the United States government sees is people power, people's movements, and actual democracy.
I think that's a very good point. And let me just back up once again to the passing of Hugo Chavez and what his legacy has meant, not only for the people of Latin America, but for the world. When Hugo Chavez died, people around the world said, "Yo soy Chavez, I am Chavez." That was a declaration of individual empowerment. Now, in contrast, one of our most popular presidents, one that we might not in this room particularly like, of the 20th century in the United States, Ronald Reagan died. Nobody said, "I'm Ronnie."
Indeed not.
Gloria, we've got just a minute left. Could you have some final words on this and how people get more information?
Real quickly, in English, if people want to get daily news from Venezuela, they can read telesurtv.net, and it's TelesurNet, and they have an English part of it, as well as VenezuelaAnalysis.com. But very quickly, one, we need to look back to Obama's campaign speech in 2008, May 20th, when his speech was about Latin America, and he basically said, paraphrasing, he said, "George Bush's policies so isolated the United States that Hugo Chavez filled the vacuum." You know, he was meaning the ALBA countries, and he said, "We will not allow that to happen." And that's been U.S. policy ever since toward Venezuela. Ultimately, the U.S. wants to also greatly weaken and overthrow Cuba's revolution through weakening Venezuela. And Venezuela's influence and victory was why Evo Morales, Daniel Ortega, Rafael Correa were elected and why there's been such a great change. We need to defend Venezuela And there is a lot to read. You can read liberationnews.org, where I've written several articles, but there's quite a lot of information.
Gloria LaRiva, Answer Coalition, traveled to and written extensively about Venezuela. Thank you for joining us on the Project Censored show today, and thank you for sharing places with the public that they can go and find more information.
Thank you all.
Roger Harris, last word, website, any information, any place you can help direct people to find out what's really going on here in Venezuela?
Yes, I'd like to echo Gloria. The last thing I think that we should really understand is that the attack on Venezuela is not because it endangers the national security of the United States. That's ridiculous. And in fact, everybody in Latin America has chimed in. President Correa of Ecuador has called it a bad joke. But it is both ludicrous and dangerous, because Venezuela does, in a way, pose a threat. It's the threat of a good example, and that's the example the United States would like to destroy.
Roger Harris, Marin Task Force on the Americas, thank you very much for joining us today on the program for updates on Venezuela. And also, I'd like to give a shout out to Abby Martin, Project Censored board member, who is writing and working again with Media Roots. And if you go to mediaroots.org, you can hear an interview that Abby Martin recently did with Mark Weisbrot. And Roger, you mentioned Mark earlier in the show. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Gloria, for joining us today. After this musical break, we'll be back to speak with Adam Horowitz, the producer of the documentary Nuclear Savage. It's a film showcasing the radiation exposure and problems in the Pacific Islands after U.S. government experiments and bombings there. Stay with us.
This is the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips, and Maya McHugh also joins us, our intern from College of Marin, working with Project Censored faculty affiliate there, Susan Rahman. So we are always pleased to be working with students, training the next generation of good citizen journalists, activists, and just global citizens. And so we're really happy and fortunate that we have such positions to teach in public educational institutions. And we're, of course, happy to be here on another public and community institution, Pacifica Radio. Here is Peter Phillips to introduce our next guest as we talk about the documentary film Nuclear Savage. Peter?
Adam Horowitz has worked as a producer, director, writer, cameraman, editor of documentary films since 1986. His most recent film, Nuclear Savage, was produced in collaboration with the American Public Television Network, PBS, and the Kindle Project, and had its world premiere at the Amsterdam International Documentary Film Festival in November of 2011. It was awarded the Jury Prize for Best Feature-Length Documentary. He's been in a number of other film festivals around the country, but PBS has never aired the documentary, at least nationally. And Mr. Horowitz is a Berkeley person. He had a BA from here in humanities and journalism at the University of California, Berkeley. Adam, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
You know, I was unaware of your film until last semester when we were contacted to do a special showing at Sonoma State, which we did. And we had about 100 students came out, and they were appalled. I mean, they nobody knows this history. There were 67 nuclear tests in the Marshall Islands in the 50s, in the late 40s and 50s. And that had a huge impact on the people there. Tell us your story, how you got involved, and why this movie is so important.
Well, I first went to the Marshall Islands back in 1986, and I've been going there on and off for all these years. And I first went there to make my first documentary there, which was called Home on the Range, which was actually about the U.S. Missile and Star Wars test base in the Marshall Islands at a place called Kwajalein. And Kwajalein was the base for all of this nuclear testing back in the 50s at Eniwetok and Bikini. Bikini later having a bathing suit named for it. And my first film there was really about this missile defense base, which is still operating today. And at that time, I also interviewed a lot of people who were survivors and victims of this nuclear testing in the 50s. And they were telling me back in the 80s that they had been used as human experiments and that they had been exposed on purpose and they had been studied. And there wasn't a lot of proof of their claims at that time. And 20 years later, I went back to the islands to make this new film, Nuclear Savage, and uncovered a lot of proof and documents, original U.S. classified documents that proved without any doubt that people were purposely exposed for the purpose of studying them, and they were used as human guinea pigs. And I interviewed a lot of them who were direct survivors of this testing and who had been given numbers, test numbers, and many of them had been brought to the United States for study, and the Department of Energy purposely put them on these contaminated islands for 30 years in order to study what happens to humans when they eat contaminated food.
Adam Horowitz, this is, again, an incredibly underreported story and extremely problematic and challenging, I think, for people to maybe hear. And this, of course, the focus of your film, Nuclear Savage. People can learn more about that at nucleersavage.com. I wanted to read a brief passage here from Barbara Rose Johnstop,
that says that between 1946 and 58, the United States tested 66 nuclear weapons on Bikini Islands. And, of course, Peter mentioned that a little bit ago. But I wanted to give people a little bit of context for this. And you can, of course, please elaborate on this. This is to consider the gravity of this history. The total exposure yield of nuclear militarism in the Marshall Islands is 93 times that of all U.S. atmospheric tests in Nevada. More than 7,000 Hiroshima bombs. That's riveting kind of information that I think people would maybe know about that. Adam?
Yeah, you know, here was this very isolated, pristine, magical country. And the Atomic Energy Commission at that time, now Department of Energy, decided to use this pristine, beautiful country to blow up hydrogen bombs. And it's just a crime. And to think about thousands of Hiroshima bombs blowing up on these islands is just, it's beyond comprehension.
And not only did they blow up the bombs, but then they had this secret Project 4.1, which was medical experimentations and research on the native people.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting because we're talking about the PBS censorship of the film, but the project itself and even the nuclear testing at that time was completely censored from public scrutiny. And the human experiments done at that time were top secret. And even to this day, the U.S. government denies that people were experimented on, which flies in the face of their own precise documents by their own scientists who pre-planned these experiments and planned them in advance and described in advance very precisely, we're going to expose these people so we can study them. And the U.S. still denies it to this day, despite these very precise documents that prove their intention that they carried out. So the suppression of the documentary film is, in many ways, a continuation of this U.S. government suppression of the story. And working with PBS on this for many years, you know, it's been quite a window into how the U.S. government uses the public broadcasting network is its own public relations organ, or public relations station. And I've gotten a really fascinating and sad view into, you know, how this network works, that they call, you know, public broadcasting, but it's actually a mixture of U.S. governments and military contractors, really, who finance and run it. And I've gotten this, you know, direct window into that and how it works and how films are not made or not shown or altered. So it's been quite a education for me.
Adam Horowitz, the film's Nuclear Savage, and we've certainly covered Project Censored, censorship of all kinds, including PBS, film on the Koch brothers with Carl Diehl, Tia Lassen, because of the connection between the Koch brothers and public broadcasting in Boston. So unfortunately, Adam Horowitz, we're not surprised by, you know, PBS's not running this. Not on the surface of it, of course, one would think this is exactly the kind of thing public broadcasting would do. But it also, I think, really helps remind listeners that it's not so public. And there's a lot of private money interest behind it. And as you're telling us here, this film was, shall we say, radioactive. They did not want to touch the contents of this film.
You know, the interesting thing is about PBS is they did fund it. They funded it twice in both production and editing, post-production. And PBS is like this octopus with all these arms, and the left arm doesn't know what the right arm is doing, and nobody seems to know what the head is thinking. And, you know, I was funded by one branch, and it made its way through. And the film was, the first thing they did was recut it. So when I delivered the film, originally it was an 86-minute film, as per my contract. And the first thing they did is said, well, this needs to be cut down for broadcast. Can we recut it? And I said, well, if you work with me. And they then, PBS, cut it down to 55 minutes. And this was back in 2012. And it was then accepted for broadcast on one of the octopus arms, something called APT. And they accepted it for broadcast, and it was scheduled for a series. And I thought, okay, this is great. It's going to be on the air. And then a month later, I got the message, well, they want some changes in the film, and they want more fact-checking. And then I said, okay, send me the list. Let's change it or let's fix it. And they never sent me the list. And then a month later, I got the message, well, APT has rejected it now.
That's the very similar story, Adam Horowitz, that we got on the Koch brothers film. In fact, that's startling, some of the similarities here.
It's the same people, and I think I'm involved with the Koch brothers as well on this.
Yes.
Then the next year in 2013, I got the message, okay, it's been accepted for broadcast now.
It's
another of these octopus arms, which is run by WGBH in
Boston.
Right.
That's right.
And that is, of course, the board of WGBH is headed by David Koch.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wow. Okay.
Well, I believe he resigned as a result of some of the things that were happening there and then threatened to pull money from support of the station. And that obviously scared the people over there as a way of intimidating, you know, I think, programming, really, a way of sort of shaping programming behind the scenes. Certainly we know that public broadcasting, again, is not completely innocent of these kinds of charges about censorship. And this particular issue, let's kind of get back to the issue here of the film Nuclear Savage itself. And we have a clip to play. So we would like to play, I think we have about a 5-minute clip, and it'll give listeners a little bit of an idea of what's going on in your film Nuclear Savage.
In less than a minute, you will see the most powerful explosion ever witnessed by human eyes.
Yes, I had a dream at the same time the Pride Light. I was dreaming that I was in the middle of all the fire. Things fall down from the sky, and when they hit the ground, that was a fire. They should have taken action right away to evacuate the people from there, but they didn't.
I wonder if they will tell you about Project 4.1, the study of humans exposed to radiation. Drawn in 1953 for the planned 1954 Castle nuclear test series, Project 4.1 contemplated the study of exposed human beings.
The Marshallese caught by fallout got 175 wrenches of radiation. These are fishing people, savages by our standards. So a cross-section was brought to Chicago for testing. The first was John, the mayor of Rongelap Atoll. John, as we said, is a savage, but a happy, amenable savage. The Iron Room is a radiation detector for human beings. One dot, one gamma ray.
Rongelap number 40. That was his guinea pig number. Two of those numbers were assigned to fetuses.
The United States deeply regrets the hardships the peoples of the four atolls have endured as a result of the testing program. as well as the accidental downwind injuries caused by one test. Bravo.
The American representatives to this day are talking about the accident that occurred, meaning Bravo, when all the documents today indicate that there was no accident.
Possible to do an interview with you at some point to talk about U.S. government policy?
Probably not.
And why is that?
Maybe we could turn the camera off and we can have a little chat.
Why would we pick these idyllic islands? Inhabited islands. That, for the life of me, I will never be able to understand.
That is a clip from the film Nuclear Savage. You can learn more about the film at nucleersavage.com. We're speaking now with the producer, director, writer, camera person, editor of the film, Nuclear Savage, Adam Jonas Horowitz. And Adam, our Project Censored intern, Mayim Q, would like to ask you another question about the film.
Sure.
Hi there. I just wanted to point out from Barbara Rose's John Stott article that it's just astonishing to see that on our past week's radio show, we're talking about Fukushima and its correlation in comparison to Chernobyl. And in relation to this radioactive contamination of the Marshall Islands, it's just astonishing to see that it's estimated 6.3 billion curies of radioactive iodine-131 were released into the atmosphere. In comparison to Fukushima and Chernobyl, it's like 42 times greater. And it's just astonishing to see that this radioactive contamination is completely immense.
Well, the cloud, just one of those bombs that they blew up in the Marshall Islands, the single bomb was 1,000 Hiroshimas in its explosive force. And that was just one of these 67 bombs. And the fallout from these explosions went around the globe. And in that way, it was, you know, one of probably the worst nuclear environmental catastrophes that the world has seen, the combined effects of these hydrogen bombs. And many of the islands in the Marshall Islands today are abandoned. And you go there and the coconuts are radioactive, and there's crabs running down the beach that are radioactive, and people can't live there. So there's a lot of Marshall Islanders who remain refugees in their own country because they had to live on other islands that were out of the fallout areas or the major fallout areas.
Adam, we've got a couple minutes left, and Nuclear Savage is a title. And you're implying that the makers of these bombs are savages.
Well, you know, as you heard in the film clip, the U.S. government scientists call the Marshall Islanders savages.
We heard that, yes. You're meaning these bombs. I mean, this was a savage thing to do. And let alone Project 4.1, testing radioactive fallout, knowing full well that people had been impacted and doing nothing medically to intervene other than see how it impacts them.
Yes, it's you know, they were actually, in the film, they were compared to Nazi scientists, and they were actually compared by the likes of...
I mean, this is reminiscent of Tutuski experiments on syphilis, and it's savage.
It is savage.
And it needs to be part of the American, you know, understanding of what our government is capable of doing.
And that's why it's been frustrating to have the film suppressed from broadcast.
Well, how can people see it?
They can see it online on my website and order a DVD or watch it on on-demand video. But also, I have gotten an offer from Free Speech TV to broadcast film.
Excellent. Free Speech TV, excellent. We definitely have friends there. They've shown our film. That would be a fantastic way to get your film out to the public. How's that looking?
It's a little bit of a gray area because PBS claims that they still retain the U.S. broadcast rights.
Oh, my.
But, you know, they've sat on this film for 3.5 years without showing it. And, you know, they, as I mentioned before, it was supposed to be shown on WGBH World Channel. Mm-hmm. And they even advertised it across the country on their websites, PBS, various PBS websites. And at the moment of broadcast, it didn't show. And they killed it. And World Channel scheduled it again for December of 2013. Again, did not show it. And from everyone I've consulted with, it seems that the PBS contract guaranteeing them, or where they hold U.S. broadcast rights, that they have waived their rights by sitting on this film for 3.5 years. They did their own cut of the film, which they scheduled and then censored at the last minute. So it's my understanding that there shouldn't be an issue with showing it on Free Speech TV, and I'm happy that this is going to happen. And I've told Free Speech TV that they should go ahead with this because the PBS contract seems to have been waived. Right.
Adam Jonas Horowitz, thank you so much for joining us on the Project Censored Show today. Your film, Nuclear Savage, and people can learn more at nucleersavage.com. They can contact you through the website nucleersavage.com and watch the film. Please keep us informed at Project Censored about any developments, and certainly be glad to have you on. This is a very important issue. Adam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. We'd like to thank KBBF for airing our program. Thanks to Anthony Fest, our producer, Erica Bridgman at the controls. We air on over 20 stations around the U.S. You can learn more about us at projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook.
Because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. It's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain. But my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cars that turn the global economy. We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring. An anomaly to those who can't imagine a world without oppressive force, enslavement for almighty dollar bills. We won. We got the love of it, our brothers and our sisters. We won. The people together can overthrow the system. We won. We got that love of it, your brothers and your sisters. We won.
By criminal minds, political ties, habitual lies, alibis, disguise, under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies like an ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, fall for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by taxing while the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens, in the times where the master thief can buy and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame at the table, then you're probably on the menu.
We got that love of the brothers and our sisters.